I'm Cameron Crookston.
And I'm Patrick Murray. And this is
Video Queens.
The show where two queens take a look back at the movies that made them.
And this week we watched Trek. So we watched Trek.
We did watch Trek. I also just wanna like let everyone know. I might be trying a new thing where, because we've been snapping when we agree with each other, and that's creating a nightmare for the audio peaks, as Cameron would like to say. I will try maybe just being like snap.
Because I'm a monster, I'm going to leave that explanation in, but I will edit out every time you say snap. Just to mess with you.
That is evil. And that is, you know what? That is not a treat. That's a trick.
That is a trick. There should be a prequel called Treat. No, it would be a sequel because that comes second.
Well, also good, because I don't think we need to see what happens before.
Right. What did you think? You've never seen this before, is that correct?
I have not seen this before. Okay. I just have a couple of questions first. Yeah. Would you say this is still your favorite movie?
Okay. I'm not sure that I ever went on record and said my favorite movie.
Oh, it was off the record, but I'm bringing it onto the record.
This is my favorite gay rom-com.
Okay.
Yeah. And I will also, jumping ahead, but this movie had a very special place in my little queer childhood, so a lot of it is contextual in the original circumstances.
Right. I mean, I thought it was a rom. I don't know if there was much calm.
Oh, we're going to fight about stuff because I calmed very hard.
Okay, well, I did not calm in my pants, in my sheets, or anywhere. Again, like, this is like when we watched Not Another Gay Movie, and you were like, I laughed out loud. I LOL'd exactly once. And if you took away one, that was my experience of this movie.
Oh, my God.
I did not hate it.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought it was boring.
But you did hate it. Okay.
I thought it was boring, but kind of like in an inoffensive way. And let's maybe just dive in.
Okay, let's dive in. Because you apparently slept through it, why don't I do the
can I also say that I do recognize that I am so easily convinced that there's a very real chance by the end of this it will be my favorite movie too.
Okay. I'll try and sell you on my experience. Okay.
Okay.
Let's see here. How does it start? Okay. So Gabriel is a struggling musical theater writer who's kind of uptight and doesn't get laid apparently. And he goes out to a bar, which he never does, and falls, like, kind of becomes smitten with a go-go boy that he later meets on the subway. He takes him back to his house, but Gabriel lives with a straight guy and they share a room, so he doesn't have his own space. And basically what ends up happening is it's the story of these two guys who just met trying to have a quick hookup, but they can't find a place to have sex, and they accidentally end up spending the whole night together and getting to know each other. And it, kind of every situation, they always like, whenever they're at a place, they're like, oh, there's another place we can go. And there's always some, like, I'm going to say comical. Patrick might disagree with me. Some, like, comical.
There's
Go ahead. Okay. No, go ahead.
I think you said comical, but you just meant to say the word obstacle. there are obstacles.
Comic obstacle.
Comic-Con obstacle.
Yeah.
They are faced with challenges.
Which may or may not be funny. We will, and that's, I think, that's what we're here to decide in this courtroom.
There is also, there's also kind of, I would say, like, in the world of the B plot is Gabriel's relationship with his best friend, Tori Spelling, who plays his, like, obnoxious, kind of very musical theater girl best friend, who kind of, and definitely, like, she's not the only one who seems to kind of, like, take him for granted or, okay, I burped in the middle of talking. I was like, take him for granted. take him for granted. So I guess it's also kind of like him, like, finding his voice. I don't know. We'll just say it also included that it was also about his relationship with his girl best
friend. I feel like I should do, like, a turn to the audience and just explain that, like, I know Patrick has a habit of giving everyone a nickname, and I encourage that. Maybe I don't curb it enough. And so you might be thinking that Tori Spelling is the nickname he's given this character, and that's fair. But, because that's kind of what it sounds like, but actually this, the character is played by the actor Tori Spelling. So it's actually Tori Spelling playing the character of Catherine. Who is the gay best friend, and she has the distinction of being two of the obstacles that prevent them from having sex. Only recurring obstacle. Is that true? Debatable. We'll get back to it.
I was actually able to convince myself that maybe she is Tori Spelling in the movie, because Coco Peru just says that she's Coco Peru. And I'm like, is Tori Spelling Tori Spelling?
I mean, I will say that this is, I'm a big fan of meta casting. And so Tori Spelling playing a really obnoxious, bad actress with too much unearned confidence is easily the best performance of her career. I love her. I love her in this movie. And she really is that thing where it's like, when I tell people Tori Spelling is in this and they make a face, I'm always like, no, that reaction will help you, because that's how you want to see her in this.
Yes, I actually did. I did, like, when she's performing his song. So he's a musical theater writer. I guess there's, like, it's like another part of it is, I guess, him, like, finding the truth that he could, like, he's, like, writing love songs, but he has never been in love. So, like, is this, like, if he went out and lived a little, he would be able to write better music. But then it turns out that actually the song was perfect all along.
Well, someone who hated this movie, anyway, found a lot of death. That's a very good summation.
But I did think that Tori Spelling was, like, so game to be so embarrassing. Like, she was just so embarrassing that I did find it really, it was endearing, not to the character, but to Tori Spelling, the actress, who I thought, good for her.
There is a great, I think it's the first scene, probably, where he is, Christian, I keep trying to remember that name. Christian is...
Who's that?
Oh, right, it's not Christian, Gabriel. He wanted to call him, and I don't know why.
I think we should call him Hallway, because he likes to sleep in the hallway. And maybe this would have been better if he just stayed there.
Monster. You're the worst. Gabriel is workshopping. He goes to, like, a songwriter's workshop in a very 90s building where everything's, like, exposed concrete but spray painted. He does this, like, mediocre... No, why am I doing that? He does this great musical theater song, and he's gotten Catherine, who's an actress, to just help him workshop the song, and it's very clear that all she's supposed to do is sing the song, because this is not a full production, it is a workshop, and it's truly just about him getting notes on his songwriting. But she comes, she has costume pieces, she brings tap shoes, and she has choreographed a tap number which incorporates an umbrella that she hides behind. And it's so unnecessary, and it's so
yeah.
that friend you have who just like mm-hmm. Who takes up a lot of space and is just has no shame and is always auditioning for.
Is that me?
No, you get really embarrassed sometimes. Not at the right times, but you have the capacity to be embarrassed. Yeah.
Okay, that's yeah. true. That's true. Whew, I didn't know if you were. I didn't know.
No, you can't. You care way too much what people think to be this character.
Okay, that yeah. okay. I can. I will take that insult and turn it into a compliment in my okay, head. Great.
The actor who plays Gabriel. Do you know who that is?
No.
Hold on to your yawns. That is Neve Campbell's brother.
That is nothing.
In 1999, that was a get.
Oh my God, that is Neve. That's Pete Campbell.
That's his name?
No, I don't know.
Oh my God, you know what? It's Christian Campbell. That's why I have the block.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that an interesting tidbit, Patrick? aren't you starting to care and learning to love, not unlike the plot of this movie?
Equally interesting, Neve Campbell's parents lived close to the person I carpooled with.
That's like the shadiest use of the word equally I've ever heard. Well done. You weaponize the word equally. That's good. Okay. Right. So I wanna go through the various conflicts. So yeah. like he cruises Mark is the name of the go-go boy, who's like such a 90s hot, this like completely hairless bodybuilder thing. So okay, so they after they see each other at the bar, they see each other at the subway, they cruise each other. Running into a go-go boy an hour later on the subway is the 1999 version of recognizing someone on Grindr. Because the eye choreography they do when they see each other on the subway, and it's like, oh, we do that now, but the context is different.
Yes. So they lock eyes on the subway.
Stop one is Gabriel says, let's go back to my place. And they get there, and Tori Spelling as Catherine is printing off a million resumes on his dot matrix printer, 99.
Yeah.
And she is really obnoxious.
On that weird paper too, that has like the side, like, you know, those like that paper that had the, like the holes on the side.
That yeah. Dot matrix is the name.
Oh.
Yeah. Age difference.
Why did it have those?
Because it used to like...
So annoying.
No, because in the olden days, you're gonna get a little history lesson. The mechanic of the machine like pushing out paper was on like, oh God, I wish we could see each other right now. Like not a track, but on like almost like spools. And so that pushed the paper forward at an even pace.
Okay.
I'm gonna draw you a diagram later. I think I got it.
So like, cause something sticks into those holes and keeps it pushing.
Exactly.
Got it.
Okay. Anyway, it's a fairly minor plot point in this movie.
This is also equally as interesting as Neve Campbell's brother.
Anyway, so Catherine is there and she won't leave because she's printing off stuff. So they have a kind of a forced interaction where they're like getting to know each other, and like Mark is accidentally getting to meet this guy. Catherine finally leaves and they start to get sexy, but Gabriel is so uptight that he like can't handle touching Mark's torso, and then like starts to play the piano because it's the only way he can relax. So we're getting the vibe that Gabriel is very uptight and wants to experience sex, but it's less because he's really like turned on and more that he's like trying to challenge himself to live. And when they're finally about something to start happen, the straight roommate that Gabriel lives with comes home, and his girlfriend who's been away all summer is there, played by an actress that I love who's been in like two things, and she's so funny.
I meant to look her up after too, because I liked her in it.
She is in, the only thing I really know her from other than this is she's in the Stepford Wives remake with Nicole Kidman. She's one of the Stepford Wives.
Okay.
And she's, I mean, because she's got this kind of like Marilyn Monroe-y kind of like breathy voice. So it works for these, it works for this character and it works for a sexy robot. Right. So anyway, they get kicked out by the roommate and the girlfriend. Gabriel realizes that he can maybe call on his one friend from writing group who is kind of an older effeminate bear. But older effeminate bear is at a piano bar where he's singing a really stupid song. And they're like, effeminate bear, can we go to your place to have sex? And he's like, of course, I'm an effeminate bear. I'm fun. And they're walking home to let him in. And he reveals that he's just broken up with his boyfriend. And the boyfriend walks by. So effeminate bear decides that he's going to make him jealous by making out with Mark. Yeah. And Mark like pretends in this like weird little scenelet that he's like super into effeminate bear to make the boyfriend jealous, but they end up like crying and they're like gonna get.
And was that making you laugh when that was happening?
It made me smile. I thought it was.
Did Cameron make a ha ha?
I thought it was a fun moment. I smiled with my heart. I thought it was sweet. Thought it was sweet that Mark was
okay, playing. I thought it was sweet. Okay. No. But I thought it was sweet that that Cabaret Bear's full character arc resolved and he was back with his partner. And I was like, yay, like shout out to older gays in love. Like, cool, this is nice. Again, it's just like, oh, little like moment of just like gay happiness. Again, like plus 10.
I mean, I think with all of the characters that aren't Mark and Gabriel is I don't necessarily, they are truly like obstacles. Like they're bosses in a video game. They're not really there to give you like arcs and stuff. They're truly just like, we are here to be a fun point of conflict and the reason you can't have sex.
Okay.
So I mean the fact that none of the side characters were particularly like arky. Did not bother me because they were just
sort of no. I actually liked that
part. Oh, okay.
I actually thought it was like a nice like little couple. Oh, okay. Like I was like, oh, cute. Like this is like, even though it's an obstacle, it's just like, oh, we have like two older gay men who are like in love and happy, and it doesn't need to be a big thing. They just like leave holding hands, and you're like, oh, I hope they have a lovely life.
Okay, that was nice. Well, I will take that away from you.
I don't want to see them in Treat. But I'm happy they were in Trick.
Fabulous. And you're happy with that wordplay still? Feel good about it?
I think I can bank on it a few more times, right? Like it's definitely.
No. Okay. So then they go to a club together because they're like vibing and, on the.
This, I have so much to say.
Okay.
About.
You take this one then.
Okay. So they go to Boy Culture, the club. Okay, wait. Actually, I need to jump back for a minute. I'm so sorry. Please. When they are in the apartment, and they're like they're getting kicked out by Stepford Wife and like the douchey straight roommate. Mm-hmm. He has a dog named Trixie. And he's just like, oh, Trixie, like, time to go in the backyard. And he just puts her on the fire escape. I was so concerned about this dog on the fire escape. And it ends and the dog is still there. Like, there are multiple scenes where they check back in with, like, the straight couple in the apartment. Or someone goes back to the apartment. No one lets this dog inside. The most that happens is the Stepford Wife puts a bowl of food out on the fire escape of a fifth floor walk-up in New York City. For this small dog that could 100% fall off something. And they're just like, doop-a-doo. That was so shocking to me. And like stuff would be going on and I'm like, is the dog okay? And I'm so concerned that they're gonna kill it for some kind of like comedic effect or something. Like, I don't know. But that, I just need to say that that was very concerning.
Okay.
I will say, okay, I'll save my Tori Spelling stuff for maybe when we like take a deeper dive into her. Okay. Yes, they're at Boy Culture, and so a couple of things happen. First of all, what I really liked is the experience of like going with someone somewhere where they, for some reason, know everyone and you know no one. Like where, you know, there's just like the person who's like, ah, hey, John, hey, David. Oh, my God, Trevor, another Sean. And you're just like, okay, okay. Like I'm clearly a plus one. But for me, what activated the PTSD so much and like honestly like made me homophobic again was like when they're dancing and like at one point I'm like, okay, this guy's name was like, I'm like Tito. And then I'm like, his name is Dino, like the fucking dinosaur. This friend of Mark's comes over to them. Gabriel says hi to him and he looks and ignores it. And that moment alone, I was like, this happens and we need to talk about it. Like, you heard me say hello. And we will not be silenced anymore. Those of us who greet, those of us who shake, who put out our hands and introduce ourselves, like, I remember there was like a group of gay friends I was in LA, and there was one of them who I spent almost every weekend with him, and he never said hello to me. We would be standing next to each other dancing in a group, and I do not know his name, and he would not make eye contact with me.
I don't think he were friends.
So you know what? His name is Dino the fucking dinosaur, and all of those people can go die.
This reminds me of a very distinctive moment. It was so ridiculous that it didn't even hurt my feelings, but it was just so over the top where it was actually in New York. I was at a club. I can't remember what club. And I like met this like group of guys and one of their friends came over and was kind of like, "Who are you?" And I'm like, "I'm Cameron." And they're like, where are you from?" And I was like, I'm from Toronto. And all he said was like, and then turned away from me. Like, it was so comically ridiculous and sad that I was Canadian.
And you're like, are you literally like a Disney villain? I'm just like, oh, dude.
Is a lazy writer dreaming you right now? Like, you can't be a real person.
Yes, because you just think like, there's no way that that just happened.
No.
So they're at Boy Culture. A lot happens here that had to do with the plot, and that's the part I don't care about.
Well, we should just like...
Okay, yeah.
So Dino is there, and Dino is like sloppy drunk, and he's obviously into Mark and really resents that Gabriel is there. And it's just kind of being like unnecessarily vicious and dismissive of Gabriel while throwing himself at Mark. Mm-hmm. That's the plot.
Well, also, I mean, and then the other thing is... Coco Peru, Coco Peru does what can only be described as like an 8-count of a lip sync, because a song is playing, they are dancing to the song for 8 counts. Coco Peru walks through the crowd and lip syncs to it while looking politely at Mark, and then again, like everyone is just hissing at Gabriel.
Okay, you need to go back and watch the scene.
But
okay,
then,
go on.
But then the plot twist is that Gabriel goes to the bathroom and Coco Peru comes in and locks the door and is like, look, like this guy is shady. Like essentially it's just like, you seem nice and I'm just going to give you a word of advice. Like,
is that how you read that shitty. Scene? Read that scene is you seem nice, I'm going to give you advice?
She's like, you seem nice, so I'm gonna like save you the...
Okay, I need you to go back and watch it with subtext. So what is happening in this moment is that, so Coco Peru, the real person, and Mark have apparently hooked up in the past, and Coco is aggressively bitter and is trying to harpoon this hookup. she does not care about Gabriel. She is just trying to, like, poison the water.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't think she's, like, girl to girl. Yeah. Like, but she does say, like, look, you seem nice.
Look, you seem younger than me and pretty, so I'm going to give you some advice that's going to make you unhappy.
Yes. So she says, like, essentially, he's full of shit. He does the same thing to everyone. You know, they met because, essentially, she says, like, oh, he was pretending to be asleep on the subway, and Locke dies with me, and that's exactly how Gabriel met him. And, you know, oh, and he tells everyone that he lives with this woman in Brooklyn, but that's a lie too. And he gave me a phone number, but it was actually just to, like, a garden or something. And Gabriel's like, oh, that mm-hmm. sucks.
And then Gabriel comes out of the bathroom at an inopportune moment because Dino, the last dinosaur, is like kiss falling down on Mark. And Gabriel's like, well, that proves it. And he runs.
Yes. So then Mark finds Gabriel where he belongs in the hallway and is kind of like, it's like, oh, why'd you come back here? Like, whatever. Somehow they have the conversation of, like, I don't know if Gabriel says something about that they were just looking for a place to hook up. Mark says, is that all this was? And he says, yeah, for me. Mm.
And, okay, you're skipping something so central, if I may. I think maybe my favorite obstacle is, so they go back, Mark chases Gabriel back to the apartment, but Mark also left his keys there when the first time they were trying to hook up. So Gabriel forces his way into the apartment, even though the douchey roommate and the girlfriend are having sex. Douchey roommate goes to the bathroom, and they are looking for the keys.
I fully thought, I was like, he doesn't have keys. Oh. Like, I thought the reveal was going to be like, he was like, I'm homeless.
Oh, that's not the reveal.
Or like, I just go out to hook up, and like, that's how I like stay anywhere. So when he was like, oh, gotta find my keys, are they? I was like, I'm on to you. So anyway, so yeah, so they go in to look for the keys.
Gabriel is not engaging and is like, let's just...
No one lets them talk.
Gabriel is like, let's just find the keys so you can go home. Mark is like, I'm trying to talk to you because feelings. And then there is this third character in the room who's just a naked girl who's just kind of asking them polite probing questions with a weird smile. It comes out that she's like, I want to be a sex therapist. And then very slowly starts giving them sex therapy. And at first it's kind of innocuous. And then at one point she just turns to Gabriel and says, Gabriel, I think this would be a good point for you to verbalize your feelings. I love this character. I think she plays it so well because it's absurd, but there's like a little subtlety to it because I did not see it coming until we were in the middle of it.
Okay, I mean, like, again, like, everyone in this movie except for them is just like a device. So I was like she felt like if you ever watched The Hills, like, she felt like Whitney, who's always just like, what happened this weekend? Oh no, was Jamie there? That must have been drama. And it's just like,
I've never seen The Hills, but I need you to know that if you ever need to do a Moira Rose impression, you just did one. So, and it was pretty good, I think.
Like, it's just there to ask the main character about, like, what happened in the scene before or whatever, like, get their take the next day.
So funny that this third wheel character, like, it's true, and it's like, it's such an absurd plot device where it's like, this is a point in which they kind of need to verbalize their feelings. Wouldn't it be funny if we turned this random side character who's just naked in a bed into a therapist so she can literally tell them to verbalize their feelings?
Okay. Well,
so anyway, I love Topless Judy. I love the topless.
Topless Judy, her performance definitely like elevated that a lot more.
Then they leave because Mark leaves. Then Judy finds the keys. Gabriel goes after him, tosses him the keys in the subway. And then as Mark's walking away, says, are you hungry? And I wrote down, Gabriel, are you hungry? It's not an apology. The final location they go to is they go to a diner, and before we even, like, the establishing shot is a slow pan to reveal that Catherine Tori Spelling is there with the cast from her play. And she's like monopolizing the conversation and babbling away. So that's happening. Thoughts on this scene?
Okay, I had a couple of thoughts. First of all, I have been in conversations where someone has taken a table hostage multiple times. Like,
oh, of course you have. Absolutely. We have been at that table together.
Yes. And it's so much more egregious when it's like six people. Like, it's one thing if you're doing it to one person and you're like, okay, like maybe we won't do a coffee again. But like, but it's like when it's a table of people, I get so much more angry. My choice is always just to go completely mute. So, and then I also will stare daggers at the person who asks questions because I hate them almost more. Because I'm like, what I want is for someone to talk at length and for them to finish talking and for no one to say a thing.
Right.
Because I want them to
collective solidarity of passive aggression will teach them a lesson.
Yes. Yes. It never works. Because there's always someone who's like, oh yeah, how was that? Or whatever. And you're like, ugh. And so when he just said, you have been monopolizing the conversation since we got here, I was like, oh, that was everything to me. Like, I was like, oh my God, like I get to watch someone say the thing that I have wanted to say so many different times. So that was fabulous. Then Tori Spelling goes on a weird monologue about how she's like, apropos of nothing, how she's not a lesbian.
Okay. I need to talk about this monologue.
And she talks about poop.
She talks about poop. Okay. This monologue. I saw this movie when I was 16.
Yes.
But this monologue was my Julia Sugarbaker, The Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia monologue. Like, I thought this as like, I'm going to do this for auditions. Yeah. I am going to like, people will lip sync to this to me on my I want people to say this instead of singing happy birthday on my birthday. Right. So there's this moment where like Gabriel makes a comment about her friends being, he's like, take your girlfriends and go. And she, yeah, weirdly zeroes in on that comment and says, you know, you're always bringing up that I'm attracted to women and I'm so annoyed by it. And I feel like
she has never said like, is not like something that keeps coming up in the movie. Like, this is like, it's news to everyone. Yeah.
So she has a strong reaction to it, to which Mark, with just a tiny little raised eyebrow, says, it's obvious you have lesbian issues because you're so upset by it.
Yeah.
And then Tori Spelling goes on a tirade, and the metaphor she uses, which I'm so obsessed with, is she says, it's like when my dad tells me I should move to New Jersey. And then someone says, what are you talking about? And she says, like, my dad keeps trying to get me to move to New Jersey, but if I moved to New Jersey, it would take me an hour and a half to get to an audition. Can you imagine if my dad said, I can tell based on your reaction that there's a part of you that secretly wants to move to New Jersey, but you're just too afraid to accept it? And that just, and then she just completely spirals and has a meltdown and runs out of the restaurant. And I was like, Tori Spelling's lesbian New Jersey monologue is mood, is, yeah, oh, it was a big part of my childhood.
I think each time you deliver these things, I laugh harder than I did during the movie.
Maybe the delivery.
So maybe you should do that as an audition.
Maybe I will do a one-man show when Fringe opens up in a few years. And I'm just be like, hi, I'll be doing all of the 1999 movie tricks. And I'll be playing all the roles, but especially Tori Spelling.
But especially Tori Spelling and Judy.
Judy, oh yeah. Look, it's the keys. All right, anyway, so she runs out. They kind of have a, Gabriel and Tori Spelling have like a reconcile on the curb that means nothing. Yeah. And then Gabriel and Mark each go to the bathroom to pee. It's the first time they've been alone together for most of the movie. And they're like, oh my God, we're finally alone and like feelings. And then Mark reveals that the reason they haven't been able to go back to his place is the old woman he lives with that doesn't like him bringing guys home is his mother. And he lives at home because he's sensitive.
Yeah.
And Gabriel walks Mark to the subway. and they kiss, which turns out is the first time they kiss in the whole movie. And as Gabriel is walking away, he finally realizes what the missing line to his song is going to be. And then a chorus out of nowhere plays it and sings it. And he runs off into the sunrise. And it's the end of the movie. Scene.
Great.
So.
Should we take a break?
Or let's take a break. And when we come back, I'll explain to you why you watched it wrong.
Okay.
Maybe before I come for you, I will explain where I'm coming from.
Sure.
Okay, I'm going to talk about I will monologue this. So, okay. I saw this movie when I was 16, about 6 months after I came out.
Going on 17.
I saw it in theaters. It was the first gay movie I ever saw in theaters. I saw it at the Carlton because the Carlton used to play more indie stuff.
Yeah.
I went with my friends from camp, who everyone will remember from the last episode, all my Showtime friends.
Yeah.
I fully cried, not because this movie moved me to tears, just the experience of being in a small theater full of people who were there to watch a gay movie in which the people in the movie were also gay. And I was like, I can't believe this is happening. A year ago, I couldn't even say it out loud. So this was a really big deal for me. This also means that Coco Peru's bathroom scene was my introduction to drag.
Good start.
Yeah. I mean, like, I saw, like, To Wong Fu, and I had probably seen, like, RuPaul do a guest spot on Sabrina Martinez's Witch. But, like, This was the first real.
You were like, in drag performances, is actually just a drag queen walking through a crowd of people singing one line out of a song and then going to the bathroom.
I mean, sometimes. I mean, they used to do that at Buddy's. Right. So, I mean, like, I really loved this movie for its formative reasons. I also think, like, it's not a mind-blowing movie. Like, if you're looking for a transformative experience, this is not your movie. But I think there is something very cute and simple about the premise of, like, this is a movie about a one-night stand that accidentally turns into a relationship. The fact that the premise is that these guys want to, like, be having sex within the first 5 minutes of meeting, and they actually end up spending 8 hours together before they even kiss.
Yeah, I would have greenlit the movie. Like the idea I like.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what I liked, and I don't know if I could put, I didn't know this when I first watched it, but I was, for this, for our episode, I was just kind of like reading reviews when it came out.
Yeah.
And stay with me, because you're gonna go far. A few reviewers compared this to like a Doris Day movie.
Okay.
And I agree, and then, I mean, I don't really like Doris Day movies. They're not great. They're very formulaic. But what I kind of like about this is that, like, Doris Day movies are, like, you know, like, romantic comedies from the 50s that are just, like, extremely formulaic and very silly. Right. And they have, like, there's a certain pastiche to them. And so I actually liked this movie as, like, a soft parody of an old school rom-com, but done within, like, the world of gayness, because the thing about, like, because, like, as a gay viewer, I like nostalgia, and I don't always necessarily want to watch stuff that's, like, either, like, trying to be really edgy or constantly pushing a boundary. Like, part of me wants these kind of, I mean, I think it's why a lot of people had such a strong, like, Jones for when they finally did, like, a gay Hallmark movie this year, which obviously I have feelings about. But, like, so the fact that it was this kind of, like, old school pastiche, but what I liked is that they did it, the vibe and the structure was old school, but they didn't actually try to make it nostalgia, because the thing about gay culture is that if you actually went back to the 50s, it would be a horror movie.
Right.
Like, whenever, like, I don't know, I have a pet peeve whenever, like, people, whenever gay people are like, I'm really old fashioned, I'd be like, oh, because you're married to a straight girl, and when you go to a bar, they put it in the newspaper and you lose your job. Like, that's what old fashioned means to our people.
Which is why you've always been so fun at parties.
I can't believe I'm still single. So I liked what it did in terms of offering this kind of, like, something that felt like a very old school, old Hollywood type comedy, but like in the body of a late 90s kind of sex comedy. So I really appreciated that.
Okay. I mean, look, there are movies that I have watched before, like Lost in, like the first time I saw Lost in Translation, I was like, this is not funny. Like, this is, I hate this. And then the second time I watched it, I was like, this is hilarious. Like, I just needed to like get on board with the tone. And sometimes when you're watching something for the first time and being like, okay, so what is the world of this? Like, I can certainly see a world where like, I can rewatch it and just get on board with Tori Spelling. Right. But because again, I left it liking Tori Spelling, the actress, more, but the character I hated.
That's fair. I also think it's fair that I will always kind of watch this through 16-year-old eyes.
Right. Right.
When my palate was a little less developed. So
it's okay, it's your favorite movie and you always say before you yell at people for saying they're old-fashioned.
This is my Godfather, it's my Citizen Kane. I'll fight everyone that says this movie is not the equal of all of those.
Do you want to take a visit to the problematic?
I would love to take a visit to the problematic. I have two that I can think of.
I have two that I can think of as well. Okay, this may be wrong because I was gonna say let's say it at the same time, the first one, but I realize that it's definitely, I don't think I have it right because I'm like, oh, Kiss Me on the Pinga.
you're really close. I can't remember what it's called, but it's called like, how do you like
the Pinga song, right?
Yeah. So the, effeminate bear cabaret singer, when they go to like, ask him if they can hook up at his place, he's singing, I think they're at Marianne's Crisis, incidentally. He's singing this song he's written himself where it's just about like using Spanish to be sexy and talk about your penis. Is basically what
he's is. Like, I had a song about a cock, but that was too much. So now I'm going to do it in Spanish and you can sing along.
That's so funny. Nice.
My pinga is hot. like, it's that.
Yeah. I mean, I am like, actually floored by how close you are to the actual song as someone that's seen this movie 10 times. Again, that's the emotional. Like, yeah.
Yeah, the song was too dirty, but it's not when I sing it in Spanish. And exactly. It's like, again, obviously it's like, that's the joke, but it's a lot of like, ole ole, muy caliente, like, and again, like, Kiss Me on the Pinga.
She does not say. He does not say that.
Which I'm thinking is also Kiss Me Through the Phone. Yes. So that was like, it's also, again, obviously it's more in the like, you know, wouldn't, we don't love, like, again, it's a white guy. It's like very appropriative the whole time.
Yeah. Like it is insensitive. It's pretty dated. And it just kind of is this thing where it's like, I mean, like, to really like put it under the microscope, but like this is a fairly like exoticizing the idea that like you can get away with stuff in Spanish because Spanish is a sexy language that no one understands, and it's kind of funny too.
Yes, yeah.
I mean that is related to my box. This box is in many attics. In that, like, once again, we have a fairly ensemble-driven movie in which. All
in a world of only white.
Yeah, it's a pretty white cast. Mark is of mixed race ancestry and he is half Colombian, but everyone else is absolutely white, as are all the extras,
except for one. And again, it's like, it speaks to how white the extras are, that when I noticed one black person, I was like, well, we're 40 minutes in and you don't have a line.
Yeah. And again, this is taking place in New York in like the West Village in the 90s. Come on.
Yeah.
So my other box is actually the character of Catherine. Because...
Okay, I kind of agree.
And not just because you found her so annoying, although she was annoying. And I think for me, I'm like, I get that she's supposed to be annoying, so it doesn't grate as much on me. But what I did notice way more watching it back as like as an adult now is the degree to which Catherine is very much a caricature of like the type of, I'm air quoting here, a fag hag. And yes. This feels like, and I mean, I think that's part of like the makeup of like what makes Catherine so unpleasant and makes her such a foil. And it's interesting that you call her the villain, because the first time I was like, that's ridiculous, you're being hyperbolic. And now looking back, I was like, Catherine is kind of the villain of this movie. She's at least, yeah. Because there is this thing where it's like, she is like, she sucks all the air out of every room she's in.
Yeah.
She's like obsessed, she's a narcissist, she's obsessed with attention. She is clearly in love with Gabriel and doesn't really want him to be happy and just kind of clings to him.
Yeah.
Gets really, is very jealous of Mark, kind of like will casually bring up that her mom, like, oh, I talked to my mom, she still thinks we're dating. And it's like, really, Catherine? Did you correct her, Catherine? And I think, so as much as I want to hate on Catherine, I think the issue here is that like, that a screenwriter creates a character in which like, this is a straight woman that orbits a gay man. It's kind of like, I don't know if this is homophobic or misogynistic or both. The idea that like a straight woman who is friends with gay men is like gross and bad.
And has no life of her own. Like she, she has no, again, it's like I had, that was the other thing. I didn't connect with her. I'm like, okay, first of all, if this is someone writing, it's like, do you hate your female friends? Because my female friends would, again, understand if I'm going to go suck a dick in the bathroom. Like, and I think, you know what? You're right. Catherine is the villain and I am the hero.
You're not in this movie.
But yeah, I mean, like, yeah, it did seem like she is very much just the fag hag. No real sense of agency. Just like, I'm always more interested in like more of a celebration of like gay male to like straight female friendship or what. I don't know. I think like, but again, obviously it's a rom-com. She's just like, it is what it is, but I would.
Yeah. No, yeah. But I think in terms of like depicting a problematic stereotype that Catherine is, and it's funny because it's something I don't see a ton in like gay media anymore. And that's probably good. I think also because like as gay culture has become a lot more mainstream and kind of trendy, the idea of straight women engaging with it is less depicted as like a failing on the woman. I feel like very often a fag hag is kind of like a female Peter Pan. It's this thing where like, if you're friends with a gay guy, it means you're stunted in some way. It means that you're not growing up. It's that you're not, you don't have your own relationships. Yes. Where's your man? It definitely kind of depicts this like regressive female character. Whereas,
and it still ends up being sexist because it's like, oh, you're only here to support the arc of the man.
100%.
Like in the, yeah. Like you're just here to be like, oh my god, did Harry not call you back? Or like,
but yeah, like I think this is definitely like a relic of like the 90s and early 2000s of this kind of female character in a gay world, and I like that we don't see it a ton anymore. I maybe actually think weirdly of It's a Sin.
Oh my god, that's so funny. That's what I was thinking too, because I was like, oh, there was a way more like loving depiction of like the quote unquote fag hag character, who is again just a woman with gay friends. Like, it's still the thing where, like, why does she have to be a hag and why do I have to be a fag? Like, that was way more interest. And it kind of got into, like, well, what is, like, they have some of those conversations about, like, well, what are you doing for yourself? Mm-hmm. But it was in a more, I think, like, loving approach. And they kind of show, like, her, again, like, it's like, oh, if she's friends with gay friends, the whole thing is, like, usually if you have someone who's friends with gay people, they also have more of an understanding of how our community works. Again, it's like, those are the friends who do know what a bathhouse is, or do know what a dark room is, or are gonna fuck off with their stupid fucking resume if you, like, bring a guy back. Yeah. Like, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I liked, I mean, I know we're not reviewing It's a Sin, maybe one day, but, like, obviously what I like about It's a Sin is that, like, it takes this kind of, like, you know, like, character type or trope of, like, the straight girl who has gay friends, but it, like, it had a lot more nuance, and it also kind of, like, showed the depiction of, like, so much of gay progress, and I think straight women actually have a pretty important role in gay culture, even if they only identify as heterosexuals, just kind of, like, because of the nature of, like, allyship and advocacy, and that, like, we have relied so much on allyship from straight women in a various points of history. So a character like Catherine in Trick seems really, like, is so ungrateful of that labor and that relationship.
I agree. I think, oh, yeah, I think, like, you know, my straight girlfriends were the ones that, like, came with me to a gay bar for the first time. So even when sometimes people, oh, what are these straight girls doing in the gay bar? And it's like, first of all, they probably came with their young gay friend who needed someone to go with, you stupid fucks. Like I wasn't going to go alone. And, like, they came with me. And, like, also then, like, I wanted my friends to come out with me. Like, we went to straight bars and we went to gay bars. And, like, yeah, they got extra fucked up at the gay bars because they weren't as worried about getting raped. So, like, there's kind of this, like, symbiotic relationship that I hold near and dear to my heart, and I'm always kind of like, I'm always that, like, eyes emoji when people start, like, complaining about women in gay bars or whatever, where I'm like, okay, like, I get, like you were saying, like, it seems like ungrateful of, like, oftentimes it is, like, the women, and obviously there are different experiences, but, like, the women in your life are the ones who, like, stopped you from getting beaten up, or, you know, whatever it was that, like, kind of watched out. There's, like, this kinship.
So Catherine needs a rewrite. Yeah. So, I mean, I recommend this movie, but maybe Yes, Me 16. I don't know. Like, I think I showed this movie to a few people and they liked it, and they definitely weren't lying to protect my feelings. I think if you go in with the expectation that this is a, like, pastiche rom-com and it's very light and it's sweet, I think you can get on board.
Yeah, I would say if someone was like, should I watch this? I would be like, it's inoffensive.
It won't hurt. It's funny that we generally have agreed on the movies because, and so it's productive that we are like, look at us clashing, because when you and I sat down, peek behind the curtain, when you and I sat down to brainstorm, like, what we wanted to do for a podcast, and I think the very, like, the seed of this, you said, like, let's do a bad movie podcast, and we ended up pivoting more to, like, general indie movies of a certain era, and one of the reasons is I didn't want to close the door on only doing bad movies because I wanted to watch Trick.
Oh my god. Yeah. Okay, well, that, I mean, I think that's a perfect ending.
Well, thanks for listening.
And remember, you can email us movie suggestions at videoqueenspod@gmail.com or tweet us at videoqueenspod on Twitter.
If you're looking for a way to support the show, you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. That really helps people to find us, or just tell your friends. Word of mouth is super helpful.
And of course, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode.
Bye.
Bye.